Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, you're listening to Luke's English Podcast, and I hope that you're feeling good about yourself and feeling good about the world, because that's the sort of mindset that you should have, really, in general. If possible, you should try and maintain a positive outlook. You should try and be an optimist if you can. It's always good to look on the bright side. Try to remember that the cup is half full, not half empty. Do you know that expression, you know, the cup's half full or the cup's half empty, which is just another way of saying that if you believe that the cup is half full, then you're an optimist. And if you see the cup and consider it to be half empty, then you're a pessimist. To be honest, any cup, unless it's in some kind of vacuum, is always 100% full. It may be 50% full of H2O, of water, but the remaining part of that cup is not empty. I mean, there is air in there. There's, you know, all the molecules and stuff that you get in air, so it's completely full, unless somehow you manage to get a situation where you've put that cup or that glass into a vacuum and you've managed to find the exact 50% spot within that cup. If you've measured the surface area of the inside of that cup, and then you've managed to perfectly drip, you know, tiny amounts of liquid until you've reached the perfect 50-50 ratio inside the cup, then I suppose then you could say that it's half full because it's in a vacuum. There's literally, yes, okay. I don't think we're supposed to think so in depth about expressions like this, or the cup's half full, the cup's half empty, that kind of, I don't think we're supposed to really think about it too much. But sometimes I can't help it, to be honest. Anyway, you're listening to Luke's English Podcast. I hope you're feeling positive. You should be, because here's another episode of the podcast. If that is reason to be positive, and why not? If you need an excuse to feel good about yourself, then why not use this as that excuse? Here it is, another episode of Luke's English Podcast for your listening pleasure, brought to you by yours truly, Luke Thompson. And that's right, I'm the guy who does this podcast. If you're new to the podcast, then welcome. I know that I've recently probably had a few new listeners coming on board. For example, maybe as a result of being entered into the Macmillan Dictionary Award competition again for the fourth year running. Usually when that happens, a few people come and check out the website. They click on the link from the Macmillan site and then they have a look for the first time. So if you're brand new to this podcast, then welcome. There are lots of things for you to check out in this free service. You can, of course, I recommend that you visit the website, which is teacherluke.co.uk. I always say that, but really because the website provides you with an accompanying service to this audio download. You could just listen to this and just, you know, just listen to it. And I think that's what most people do, based on the statistics I get in terms of visits to the website and listens to the podcast. Most people, I think, just listen to the podcast, which is great. But there is lots of stuff available for you as well on the webpage, including things like transcripts and little questionnaires and polls and other things like that. And a whole archive of every single episode of the podcast so far. As well as lots of other stuff, lots of other content that you may not be aware of. If you go to the website and you click the All Episodes archive, you'll see a big list of every episode that I've ever published, along with some other little extra bits and pieces, including unique audio recordings that I've done for the website, videos, written blog posts and other stuff. So you might want to check that out. I did recently do an episode called Welcome to Luke's English Podcast and 16 Things You Should Know About Luke's English Podcast. That is number 251. And if you are new to the podcast, well, check it out. Have a listen to that, and it will tell you most of the stuff that you need to know about being a listener to Luke's English podcast. It's pretty straightforward, really. All you need to do is just listen to the show. Listen to it regularly. Just engage with it. Try and follow what I'm saying, and just let me take you on a little audio journey. Listen to every single episode from beginning to end. I recommend that you do that. I also recommend that you listen to episodes more than once, because that's a good way of just getting the language deep inside your head. You also need to activate the language as well whenever you pick up new words and things. I mean, there's, on one hand, just engaging with me and listening to this and trying to focus on what I'm saying, that obviously will have a knock-on effect, which is that you'll acquire the language in a sort of general passive way. You should try and activate language that you're learning as well by doing speaking, doing writing and things like that. One of the ways you can do that is to write comments on the page, and pretty much every single page on my website has a box at the bottom where you can add your comments, and there are forums as well on the website where people are sharing information, sharing Skype contact details, so they can find their Skype friends online and then get together and have conversations online. Skype is an incredible thing. The internet, I mean, I don't need to say it, is an amazing thing, and we should all be making the most of it as much as possible. So anyway, welcome to any new listeners. I hope that you explore this service and get the most out of it. I hope you manage to take advantage of everything that's available to you here. All of the old listeners, now I call you old listeners, I mean, you may not be old. In fact, I know that some of you are really quite young, but I say old, I mean long-term listeners, let's say. Hello, and welcome back to another episode. I wonder if you've been waiting for this one. I wonder if you have. I get the impression that some of you have, just from comments I've read, things like, where's the latest episode? We're waiting. Here it is. It's actually happening right now. Of course, it's a busy time. The university semester has begun again, and I've got loads of classes there, and I'm also up to my ears in work, in which is coming in from various different directions. I'm not complaining. No. Of course, I'm not complaining, but I am saying that it means that I have to manage my time. I don't always get the opportunity to sit down and record podcasts whenever I want. At the beginning of the year, I had a bit more free time, and therefore I was a bit more productive. I've said this already. I'm sure I have in recent episodes. Oh, that was my phone. I should put that on silent so it doesn't disturb us. Yes, you know that I've got work and stuff like that, which is great. Helps to put food on the table. You know, I'm sort of bringing some... Am I the breadwinner in this household? Let's not go into that. But I'm certainly helping to put food on the table, paying the bills, all that kind of thing, bringing the bread home. Literally, I mean, I did that today. Went to the bakery, the boulangerie, and I picked up my my baguettes, walked home. I'm living the Parisian dream. I really am. The Parisian dream, which is, of course, the fact that you can just walk around in very nice clothing. You can proudly go out in your best clothing, parade yourself around the place, sit in cafes, discussing life, the universe and everything, drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. That seems to be a Parisian person's hobby, is to sit around smoking cigarettes, flicking the cigarettes into the street, which I think is a sport that the French could try and get introduced into the Olympic Games, the cigarette flick, because they would be very good at that, very accurate. They managed to flick the cigarette across the pavement into the gutter of the street, and the target, of course, is to flick the cigarette into the running water, which sometimes runs down through the gutters of the streets here in Paris. It's a bullseye if you manage to flick the cigarette into the water, and then you can, you know, sit there while you watch the cigarette butt get washed away by the water. It's perfect, really. That's the Parisian dream. And you sit there and you eat cheese and drink wine just look at other people walking around the city and, judge them. That seems to be the way it goes. It's great. I'm getting used to it. I'm gradually becoming more and more accustomed to life here. And it's very nice, very comfortable. I'm settling in quite nicely, thanks very much. Some people ask me, how long are you going to be here? And when are you going to go home, Luke? Because we've had enough. We're tired of you. No, they don't say that, of course. But people do sometimes say, what are you doing? What are your plans? Are you going to stay there forever? No idea at this point. No idea. Who knows? We'll have to see. But, you know, who can account for the directions that life will take you in? To an extent, I'm going with the flow here, and who knows, I might end up in France for a long time. We might go back to London. It's something we talk about a lot, going back to London and finding a way to live in the city again. Who knows, we might live somewhere else. We might move to Australia, Canada, or any number of countries. The future is open. It's yet to be written. That's the beautiful thing about the future, is that we can make it. We can create the future ourselves. We can. We don't know what's going to happen, but we can try and, you know, push ourselves in certain directions. It's exciting, don't you think? Don't you think the possibilities, all the possibilities for the future are just almost endless? You can just, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can pretty much achieve whatever you want. I believe that. I think that if you're driven enough and motivated and you work hard enough and you're organized, I think that you can do whatever you want to do. I told you, didn't I, at the beginning of this episode that you should be positive when listening to Luke's English podcast. And I'm just trying to, you know, reinforce that feeling. Because when you're learning English, when you're learning a language, and in fact, when you're just moving through life in general, it's very important to stay positive. Don't let negative thoughts drag you down. Life's too short, okay? Remember that. When you're just, you know, out and about doing your business, just, you know, responding to all the challenges that life throws at you in its various ways, remember to stay positive. You know, try and keep an happy outlook, because, you know, it could be worse. And I honestly believe that if you try to remain positive and try and see the good things in what's going on around you, that actually you're more open to opportunities and you're more likely to get opportunities, to actually get the benefit of opportunities. If you walk through life all negative, assuming that everything's bad, that whatever you do will end in failure or embarrassment or something, then you're just going to miss so many things. So I think really what you've got to try and do is be positive. Don't worry about making mistakes. Just consider that to be part of the learning process. And remember that when you're older and you look back on the moments that you're having now, you won't regret the things that you do, I think. I mean, obviously, it depends on what you do. But generally, it's the things that you don't do that you regret. You know, you regret the things that you didn't do. You think to yourself, why didn't I talk to that girl? Why didn't I give her my number? What's the worst that could have happened? Or why didn't I go for that job? Or why didn't I do that risky thing that I stopped myself from doing? Because ultimately, I think what we're scared of is making ourselves look stupid in front of other people. I've read somewhere that one of the things that people care about the most is the way that other people see them. Now, that might sound a little bit, I don't know, sort of selfish or self-oriented or something, but I believe that there's a lot of truth in it. If you think about yourself, be completely honest with yourself, what is it that stops you doing the things that you really want to do? What is it that, what's that voice that tells you, no, you can't do that. No, you better not do that. I think it comes from within yourself. Now, you might try and say that it comes from an outside source, like it's my, you know, my family judging me, or the restrictions that have been placed on me by other people. But really, I think those are just excuses that we make for ourselves. And ultimately, we're the ones who are driving our futures. We're the ones who are in control. We're in the driving seat, aren't we? We're not passengers in our own lives. We're sitting in the driver's seat. So ultimately, it comes down to you. And the good thing about, I don't know what, this has become a self-help podcast, hasn't it, this episode? Just randomly, but it has. This is what we're talking about, so we're going to keep pressing on. What was I saying? You need to be in the driver's seat of your own life. Because on one hand, the risk is that if you go out of your way, out of your comfort zone to do something and it doesn't work, then you're going to feel bad because you feel responsible for it yourself. You know that you can't blame it on anyone else. But if you are sort of strong enough and you've got the mental determination, then even when things don't work out, you don't beat yourself up about it, you know, because you know you're giving yourself a chance. No one else really cares. It's all about the way you judge yourself. So don't beat yourself up if things go wrong, even though you may be the one responsible for it. You've just got to try and see it as a learning opportunity and realize that ultimately, you know, you can determine your state of mind. I remember once realizing something. I was just walking down the street and I realized something about the idea of regret. Okay. Now, do you ever have those moments where you're just sort of, I don't know, just like little moments in your life where a thought suddenly occurs to you? It could be when you're lying in bed trying to sleep, or, you know, getting the bus, or in the shower in the morning. Suddenly a thought just comes into your mind that makes you feel bad. Like, it could be something that you did or something you didn't do, and you think, oh God, why did I do that? Or why didn't I do that? That's that feeling of regret, of thinking, I wish that I hadn't done that. Now, regret is only something you have in hindsight. It's something you experience when you look back on something, okay? And I was thinking about this, and I thought, well, if I go through every moment in the present now, if I go through every moment thinking, I'm not going to regret this, I'm not going to regret whatever I do right now, I know that I'm doing the best I can and that I'll have no reason to regret it. And in a sense, you're securing your future. You're preventing those moments where you look back with regret. Because when that does happen, you realize, oh, well, no, there's no reason to regret it because I was just doing my best. And in fact, I was just doing what was the right thing to do at that time. So, for example, if you spend the afternoon sitting on the sofa watching crap TV and eating ice cream and you feel bad about it, I would say, don't feel bad about it. Just choose not to. And in fact, say to yourself, I'm just giving myself the day off. I'm eating some ice cream. I'm watching a bit of telly. Okay? Because that's what I've chosen to do at this point. And I'm not going to regret this because I chose to do it. You see what I mean? It's a sort of a way of ensuring that you don't regret things in the future. But also, it just makes you try to do things now that won't lead you to that moment of regret. Yeah, okay, all right. Now, I'm not one of these self-help gurus. You get these professional people who kind of talk about this stuff forever. They just go on and on and on about all this self-help stuff. I'm not a self-help guru, but that just suddenly occurred to me. I don't know how quite I ended up at this point in Luke's English podcast, this episode, but it seems the overriding point here is that you should try to be positive, okay? This is the positive, optimistic introduction to this episode. I say introduction, it's been 17 minutes. Anyway. Okay, so I started recording this episode today because I knew that some of my listeners might be waiting for another episode to appear. And I had a little bit of time, so I thought, okay, I'll switch on the recording equipment and I'll start saying some stuff. I don't really have a specific agenda for this episode. So this is all kind of just coming off the top of my head, really, which is fine because I think that some of those episodes are very popular ones. The ones where I don't prepare anything are usually quite popular, aren't they? Now, I could have done... I've got a lot of episodes lined up, things, ideas that I've had that are half-formed, slightly, like, partially prepared episodes, which I could tell you about, but I'm not going to. But I've got some sort of half-prepared stuff, but I didn't have time to go into those and work on preparing them and everything and then recording them. I just didn't have time, so I thought that I would just switch on the microphone and just record some stuff. And I've made a very quick list of things that I'm going to mention, but this is rather a random and unplanned episode, which does happen on Luke's English Podcast from time to time because of my working schedule. That's right, I did say schedule, not schedule. I've been through that before. Schedule, American English. Schedule, British English. Yeah, there you go. So, of course, it's schedule. Although many people in the UK say schedule as well. So, More people say schedule, to be honest, but I'm staying true to my roots, and I'm saying schedule. Okay, so I'm going to go through this list of general stuff. First item on the list: be positive. Okay, I've just added that in there now. Be positive. Don't worry, be happy. Look on the bright side. Always look on the bright side of life. The cup is half full. In fact, the cup is 100% full. Either with a liquid, probably water, or just air. Okay, because we're not, you know, the cup is not in a vacuum. You know, those, there are lots of these sayings and questions and things like, the cup is the cup half full or is it half empty? If a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there, does it make a sound? Which is meant to be one of those sort of conundrums which is impossible to answer. The logic being, well, if there's no one there to hear the tree, how can we say for certain if the tree made a noise? I mean, if you don't experience something empirically, you know, firsthand, if you don't see it or hear it, how can you be absolutely certain that it's happening? Well, to be honest, how can you be certain that anything is happening? Because we trust our eyes and ears and our senses. We trust them to be telling us the truth of what's going on in the world. But who knows? Maybe your ears are wrong. Maybe you're not seeing correctly or hearing correctly. Maybe you're hallucinating. Maybe your sensory system is malfunctioning and you're seeing and hearing things not as they are. Who knows, really? Who knows? Now, you could use the scientific approach to answer this question, which would be to look at the evidence that we've got about the world, which is that when trees fall, they make noise. I mean, every time you test that, every time you stand in front of a tree and listen to the sound, then you hear a noise. And, you know, all of the tests previously that have occurred have suggested that that's what will happen next. So we can assume that even if you're not there, it still makes a noise. So that's one thing. We can theorize that, yes, if a tree falls in a forest and there's no one there, it probably still does make a noise. We can't be 100% sure, but based on previous data, it seems that the tree is probably going to make a noise. Now, the other thing is, my personal opinion is that... okay, all right, here's another version of this. Now, in fact, the tree, when it falls... Okay, it's not the tree that's making the noise. It's actually your ear that's decoding the way that the environment is affected by the falling tree. It's your ear that interprets it, that interprets that disturbance in the atmosphere as noise. So, in fact, there does need to be an ear in order for there to be noise. You know what I mean? Okay, so when a tree falls, it disturbs the molecules in the atmosphere, the air. All the molecules in the air are disturbed. There's a wave that passes through them all, and that wave hits your ear and it vibrates the bones inside your ear, and those vibrations are converted into brain waves, you know, electric signals in your nervous system, and your brain registers all of that as noise, and we hear it in our ears or in our minds as sound. Sound of a tree falling. But really, that's just the sound waves moving through the air. So if there's no ear there to pick up those waves, then there's... see what I mean? Then there's no noise. Nah, it's still not exactly the answer to that problem, is it? What do you think? If a tree falls in the forest, does it make a noise? I want you to let me know what you think. And what do you think of my slightly half-baked theory about the idea that there needs to be an ear present? In fact, if you're not there, then it doesn't make a noise, because there is silence unless there is something to actually decode the information as a noise. I hope this is making sense. It should do. It makes sense to me. It's just that maybe I'm not able to communicate it quite as clearly as I would like. And it's rather a complex philosophical conundrum. What's that word for a conundrum? What's that word for it? It's a... Hold on. There's a specific word that goes with these sorts of philosophical ideas that are kind of impossible to understand, impossible to solve, like, you know, the statement, I always lie and that's the truth. That's an example of this thing I'm talking about. I always lie and that's the truth. Now, if you always lie, that means that you're lying now, which means that you don't always lie, which means that you always tell the truth. And if you always tell the truth, it means that you're telling the truth now. And if you're telling the truth now, it means that, in fact, you do always lie. And then we go round and round in a circle. So what's the word for that? I know that some of you know. Leave a comment under this episode of the podcast. But, I mean, I'm using the word conundrum, which is like a puzzle, an enigma, a mystery, a brain teaser, a riddle, a problem, the sort of thing that your brain struggles to deal with. That kind of thing. There's one specific word that goes with that thing. I always lie and that's the truth. I don't know why, but my brain is teased. My brain is stuck. I'm finding it difficult to think of that word. Let me have a look at the thesaurus here and see if I can find the equivalent word, the word I'm looking for. No, I can't find it. If you know what I mean, let's see if the word comes to me during this episode. But if you know what I mean, then leave the word in the comments section of this podcast episode, teacherluke.co.uk. What's the word for a philosophical conundrum? A thing that has no logical answer. Like, for example, I always lie and that's the truth. Is he lying or not? We don't really know. And the idea of if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a noise? It's not a fallacy, because a fallacy is just something that's not true. There's something that seems to be true but actually isn't. No. Anyway, I just Googled if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there, does it make a sound? And I ended up on The Guardian's website, and there are a bunch of comments, like loads of comments that relate to this ethical or philosophical conundrum. So if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there, does it still make a sound? And we've got things like, it depends on what you mean by sound. The air waves would still vibrate, but without an ear or listening device to receive them, there would be no sound. That's what I was trying to say. That's what I was trying to say earlier on. That one was sent in by someone called Alan Fraser from Darlington in England. Conaldo in London in the UK says, sound is something within human experience or animal experience. Outside of that, it's just air or whatever the other medium. For example, it could be water. It's just the air vibrating. So if someone is there to hear it, it makes a sound. If not, it causes rapid movement of particles in the air. So I think that's the answer. If a tree falls in the forest and there's no ear there, either a person's ear or an animal's ear, it doesn't make a sound. Boom. Next question. Okay, here's another one that Buddhist monks who are meditating try to think about all the time. And the question is, you have to try and imagine, what is the sound of one hand clapping? What's the sound of one hand clapping? And the idea is it's the sort of the sound of nothing. Or is it? Because what is the sound of one hand clapping? I'll show you. It's this. There you go. That's one hand clapping on itself. Does that work? Does that work? Does that count as an answer? I don't know if that counts as an answer. Anyway, that's the sound of one hand clapping. Or the other sound of one hand clapping is this. Because what I'm doing is I'm leaving my left arm still. And my right hand is clapping against my left hand. So that's the sound of my right hand clapping. Because it's, you know what I mean? The right hand is moving. The left hand's not doing anything. The right hand, that's not really good enough. Or the sound of one hand clapping is silence. Because, of course it's silence. Because there's nothing for that hand to clap against. So it just, this is the sound of one hand clapping. Ready? That was it. It was the sort of sound of the air going. That was the sound of one hand clapping. There you go. There's another one. I wonder if those Buddhist monks in Tibet would like me to tell them. Maybe I can go and visit them and do. Guys, it's okay. Break off the meditation. I've got the answer. It's okay. No, it's okay. Don't worry. I'm Luke from Luke's English Podcast. I've got something to tell you. Hello, wake up. Can you wake up, please? Yeah, look, you know what? You want to know the sound of one hand clapping? I've worked it out. I Googled it. This is it. Okay? Right, you can go and do something else now. I'm sure you've got lots of other things to be doing. You just had to try and work out the sound of one hand clapping first. Oh, sorry. You want me to go away? You want me to piss off? Oh, okay. Yeah, that may be what would happen if I interrupted their meditating session. Obviously, it's... I'm not sure that's the same kind of conundrum. I think that's just something to help you meditate. Something to help you think of nothing in particular. Anyway, there are others, like, for example, how long is a piece of string? Which is, do you know that phrase? How long is a piece of string? Which is the sort of answer that you give when, it's a bit like saying, well, it depends, doesn't it? Okay, let me try and think of a good example of that. How long is a piece of string? How long is a piece of string? Okay, it's like the response that you give when someone asks you a question and the answer is really not clear or it depends. So it's the equivalent of saying, well, it depends on the circumstances, it depends on the context. So, for example, how much money can we make from this investment in the next 12 months? Well, how long is a piece of string? You know what I mean? Meaning it depends on the market, depends on the market, it depends on the market. It depends on the nature of the market, it depends on the condition of the market, it depends on the liquidity of the market. So you don't know then. No, we don't know. There you go. But that thing, how long is a piece of string, is just a rhetorical question, which means, well, it depends, and you know, the answer could change depending on factors. It's like saying, yeah, okay, but I've got the answer to how long is a piece of string. It's twice the length from the middle to the end. Okay? There you go. Just it's twice the length from the middle to the end. That's how long it is. It's not a very satisfying answer, I realise that, but it's an answer of sorts. I think I'm most satisfied with the if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there, how does it make a noise? I think that may be the one that we've actually answered. Anyway, that's not what this episode is about. It's not about philosophical conundrums and brain teasers, although that would be a very good episode, a future episode of Luke's English Podcast, don't you think? Brain teasers and riddles. I think that's a really good idea. Brain teasers and riddles. Okay, I've noted that down, and that's going in my list of future episodes, which maybe I will achieve in the next 100 years. We will see. I've got a huge list of these things that I've written down. That see, if I was to do brain teasers and riddles as an episode, I'd need to... Don't you think I would need to prepare that somehow? I'd need to go and search for some really good riddles. I'd need to find them all. And then really what would be best is if I could try and solve the riddles myself live on the podcast. The thing is, though, I'm a bit worried that I wouldn't be able to do it, that I'm too stupid. I'm concerned that I'd go through every riddle and I would be too thick-headed to be able to solve any of them. And you would all be listening to it because I know that you're all, you know, super clever people. You must be because you listen to Luke's English Podcast, right? You're clearly some of the brightest and best that we have in the world. You'd probably be listening to it thinking, it's clearly the wind or whatever. You know, so I might make a fool of myself. What I'd need to do is get a bunch of riddles that are really good that I know the answer to, so I don't look stupid, and then find some people who are slightly less intelligent than me, and then ask them the riddles and see how they deal with them. And then at the end, we can all feel smug and self-satisfied in the knowledge that we knew the answers all along. Or I could get some riddles that I can't answer, and I get some intelligent people around me, and we talk about the riddles and try and solve them. But that's going to be difficult because I don't know any genuinely intelligent people, which is kind of a joke, because obviously I know lots of intelligent people. Okay, then. Are you all right? You still listening to this? It's not going anywhere, this episode, really, although I do have a list of things I wanted to mention. But I hope that you're still listening and that you're not going to go, oh, had enough of that. Of course you wouldn't do that, would you? Oh, no. How much did you pay for this service? It's a free podcast? So you're getting what you paid for then? Good. All right, then. So first thing, be positive. Just have a good positive outlook on life. In fact, what you can do is to start being positive, leave a comment on this episode of the podcast saying something positive. You just pick anything, as long as it's a positive statement, and you can preface it with the word, with the phrase, "This is my positive statement." If you need to, if you want to contextualize it, because you know some people might read the comments and think, "Why are they all writing these things?" Because I asked my listeners to do it. That would be the reason. So, other thing on my list, the Macmillan competition, which. I keep going on about all the time. I hope that you're not getting too fed up with that. Why would you be? Why would you be, really? I don't know. The voting closed yesterday. I've got no idea how well or how badly I did in the voting this time. Thank you very much if you did vote for me. I appreciate it deeply. If you didn't vote for me, then fair enough. It's a free country, I suppose, depending on which country you're in. And depending on how you define the word free, or indeed how you define the word country. Anyway, in my mind, you're free to do whatever you want. But if you did choose to vote for me, then thank you very much. I appreciate it. The results are going to be released in a week's time, and then we'll see whether I'm going to have the opportunity to add another award badge to my website, and whether I can feel, you know, satisfied that I'm doing a good job, that people are happy with me. But as I said, I've got no idea what the results are. There were lots of competitors, a big list of other people who were in the competition in my category. I was actually in the best Facebook page category and the best blog category. Now, I'm accepting that because, I mean, technically it's a podcast, but if you look at the website, then it does operate like a blog, with regularly updated posts and all the other things that you would normally expect with a blog. But in fact, it's more than a blog because there are also these downloadable audio files that you can take from the website as well. So anyway, we will see. If I win, obviously, I'll be delighted and touched and proud. If I don't win, then, you know, that's just the way it is. And I'm fine with that. You know, I can't win everything. And I don't win everything anywhere. I haven't won the World Cup. I haven't won any golf tournaments. I haven't even won a game of cards with my girlfriend recently. So it would just be business as usual. That's basically what I'm saying. Someone just sent me something on Facebook. Let's see. Let's have a little look. This might be a private message, in which case I will make sure that the name is kept private. What's this? All right. So this is from a listener, and it's a private message on Facebook. Hello, Luke. I only wanted to ask you if you have a podcast about gambling and the lottery. It's for my speaking exam. Thank you from the heart. You are the best. Someone's doing a speaking exam about gambling and the lottery? Really? What kind of exam is that? Like a sort of gambler's test? I didn't realise I didn't realise you needed to take a test to in order to throw your money away. I think they just let you do it without any sort of entry requirements. I don't know what speaking exam that is for, listener, but I don't have an episode about gambling and the lottery, but pretty good idea. I mean, I'm sure I could squeeze some juice out of that topic. Gambling and the lottery, you might be thinking, why don't you do it now? Well, I can't just do it off the top of my head, or can I? No, I'm going to add it to my list of things that I will never do. No, that's not true. I do these things from my list. Gambling and the lottery. I think it's quite a good subject because there's lots of things to say about that. For example, you know, all the vocab associated with gambling and betting and risk and stuff like that. And the subject of gambling, whether it's, you know, a good or bad thing to do, whether gambling should be allowed in society or whether it should be banned, the dangers, the possible benefits of betting and gambling, the place that gambling has in society in the UK, because there are betting shops all over the country. I think it's a pretty good suggestion, listener, whose name will remain unsaid at this point for reasons of confidentiality. Pretty good point, and I'm going to write it in the list, and who knows, at some point, maybe before the year 2050, that will be published. We will just have to wait and see. So anyway, second thing was, yes, competition. Thanks for voting, let's see. Let's see if I win it or not. And I'm happy and delighted. Whatever happens, obviously I'll be more delighted if I win the thing. Let's just see, shall we? Second thing is, third thing is, tell your friends about Luke's English Podcast, would you? You probably do that already, but share the knowledge, share the love. When I post things on Facebook, share the things that I've posted, if you will. For example, when I've put a new episode up, share it around. And if you think that Luke's English Podcast is worth recommending, then, you know, tell someone. Think of one person who you think would really like Luke's English Podcast. Don't just tell everyone, but pick one person in particular, a friend of yours or a member of your family or something like that, someone who you think would like this in the same way that you like it, someone who's on the same wavelength as you, someone who kind of has similar tastes as you. Tell them about Luke's English Podcast and tell them to check it out. That's quite a good way of expanding my audience a little bit. Choose a friend or two and tell them about Luke's English Podcast, okay? Spread the love, spread the knowledge. I mean, not just because it's, you know, I want to expand my audience even more, but I think, you know, it could be good for them. It could help them learn English, and what's wrong with that? Fourth thing is the transcript collaboration. I just wanted to remind you that there is a transcript collaboration on the website, there are loads and loads of transcripts being written as we speak. In fact, there's a big list of transcripts which have been finished and which I have not checked yet. So, God, there's a huge list of Google documents with finished transcripts on the transcript collaboration page. And now I have to go through all these and check them all to make sure that they're all, you know, completely perfect. I'm sure that most of them are nearly perfect from what I've seen. The standard seems to be pretty high, but the thing is, I can't publish those on the pages for those episodes without being completely sure that it's at least 99% accurate all the way through. You know, I have to do that. I have to make sure that the all of the wording is right, which is very complex because that includes even the slightest tiny mistake has to be corrected. Little things like auxiliary verbs being misheard, or words that, you know, the transcriber didn't know that have been left blank. I think all of these things have to be included, because those are the little gaps that many of you are missing. At some point in the future, when I've given myself some more time, I'm going to get those things checked and published. But you can see them all. If you go to the transcript collaboration page on the website, you can actually see them all. And there's loads of stuff there. You can print them out and use them to help you. And you could try transcribing for yourself as well. That would be good. And just leave comments under the transcript collaboration page as a way of keeping in touch with me. I'd like to just say thank you to certain people, certain listeners who I consider to be special, super specialist, advanced level Luke's English Podcast ninja assassins. And that's Piotr, and I think that, I'm not sure how to say your name, to be honest. Looks like the sort of Polish version of Peter, but Piotr, who has been doing some sterling work on transcribing. He is a transcriber par excellence, he does some really great transcription work. In fact, he also made a video, a YouTube video, which explains exactly how you can transcribe audio and video effectively and really efficiently. And that video is posted on the transcription page, the transcript collaboration page on Luke's English Podcast website. You can see the video, which kind of will help you to do your transcriptions if you choose to do them. So thank you very much, Piotr, if that's how I say your name. And if it's not how I say your name, I'm sorry. But you're doing really great work. Thank you very much. Sorry that I haven't managed to, you know, proofread everything you've done. But it's all going into the library and it's all there. And that's going to be invaluable, really, in the future. It's like kind of like you're making an investment in Luke's English podcast. Because you're adding really useful content that I can use in the future when I do get round to adapting these things. That's going to be very useful. So thank you. You're really sort of, you know, paying me back for the free podcasting that I've been doing in your own way. But there are other people too that have been transcribing. Chrissy has given me loads of transcripts. Thank you very much. And also just other people who've contributed in some way, like, for example, Andrew from Poland, who's not only transcribed loads of the phrasal verb episodes, but he's also been helping me out with sort of managing the transcripts for those phrasal verb episodes. Thank you very much. Also, just for the general bits of feedback and advice that I've had from various people. Dmitry from Ukraine, tell me which is the correct one. I think it's Ukraine, isn't it now? Dmitry has given me various bits of advice and has pushed me into doing various things that I just needed a bit of encouragement to do, like revamping the website and just fixing certain things. Every now and then he just gives me a poke, you know, just prods me like, why don't you do that, why don't you do this? And it's like, oh, I don't have time, but okay, that's actually very good advice. So thanks for doing that. Natalia Dalek, thank you very much for all of the work that you did in sort of proofreading all the old pages from my website, old pages which I hadn't looked at for ages. She went through lots of them, pointing out things that needed to be corrected, and that was actually a very valuable bit of proofreading service that you did for me. Thank you. There are loads of other people who, having not prepared this list of names, I may forget some of you. Let's see, who else is there who's made invaluable contributions? John, who recently got in touch with me on Facebook, and who has given me some bits of advice on expanding my work. Thank you very much. Your advice is very well received. My main problem at the moment is time. I don't really have the time to be able to devote myself to this project in the way that it needs me to. For example, you know, all the time that I'd need to spend on marketing it and all that stuff that I've talked about in the past. At the moment, I'm just too snowed under with work, but when my timetable becomes a bit more open, then I'll be able to devote myself to, you know, working on this more carefully. Who else is there? There's loads of people, and if I don't mention your name, then I'm really sorry, but anyone who's contributed to you know, this project, which I'm doing on my own, thank you. Okay, including people who've donated money. You're wonderful, brilliant human beings, and I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. You're, as I said, you're investing in Luke's English podcast. I hope that if you donate, you feel like some kind of stakeholder in this project. By that, I mean someone who's got an interest in it, someone who's contributed. You're sort of like a member of the Luke's English podcast club, in a way. If you've done something to contribute, rather than just listening, just taking from the service, which you're free to do, if you give something back, then, you know, I appreciate it from the heart. I really do. Thank you. Yeah, I think you know who you are. If you've helped me out, big respect to you. Thank you very much. What else? Okay, so movies. Right, movies. Recently I saw Taken 3 and I told you all about it. And I didn't think it was very good. Even though I did enjoy it, I didn't think it was really a very good film. I thought it was a bit ridiculous and stupid, but in a fun way. But I did see The Imitation Game, or I think it's just called Imitation Game, which is the story of a guy called Alan Turing, who was actually a very important person in history. And it's the movie is his story, and the actor is Benedict Cumberbatch. It also stars Keira Knightley as well. Here's my quick summary of what I thought of the film. Well, briefly, the story. Alan Turing, was a brilliant mathematician who grew up in England in the 1920s, 30s, and then the 1940s. In fact, I think this film is set when he's about 25 years old, okay? And it's World War II, and the Nazis are bombarding many countries, including England, which is being bombed mercilessly by the Nazis. The war is raging all around the world. You know, thousands upon thousands of people are losing their lives every day. And the Nazis are using a special code, an encryption, to keep their messages, their radio messages, secret. They communicate using a special secret code. And the code is incredibly complex and incredibly difficult to break. And at the Ministry of Defense, they have mathematicians and scientists who are trying to break the code. Code breakers, linguists, in fact. Linguists and mathematicians are working on it, trying to break it. They're failing. Every single day, they're failing to crack the code. And thousands of people are losing their lives in the war. Alan Turing somehow manages to answer a job advertisement looking for brilliant mathematicians who are great at solving problems. And he is a genius, this guy. He's clearly a genius, but he's got social problems. He's not very comfortable socially. He's he's kind of, you know, the way that geniuses are so brilliant because they manage to focus all of their minds on these mathematical problems and things, but it's at the expense of their social skills. So often you find these geniuses are also rather socially awkward and a bit useless. Alan Turing was a good example of that. I know that the film takes some liberties with the truth. It's not completely based on true... Well, it's based on a true story, but I think many of the events that happen in the film are not true. They've, you know, used creative license to make the film more sort of movie friendly, to give it more of a movie storyline. Just based on what I saw in the movie, Alan Turing, very socially awkward guy, and as a result of that, because he's not very good at engaging with people or persuading people or charming people, he makes lots of enemies, including people in his team who work with him, who he offends them with his kind of rational, cold, calculating mind. In the end, well, I'm not going to tell you what happens in the end, but it's a fascinating story, and it's a tragic story as well. Because what happens to Alan Turing, despite the fact that he is a hero who made sure that because of his actions, the war finished earlier than it would have done without him. He also saved something in the region of 14 million people's lives. That's what they estimate by cracking this Nazi code and allowing the Allied forces to intercept Nazi messages and understand them and therefore fight back against them and ultimately, win World War II. I know that whenever I talk about World War II, there's some people out there, some of you, who probably disagree with some of the things I'm saying, which is fine. But I know that anything, whenever you talk about global politics or war or history, there's always someone who disagrees and sees things in a different way, which is just the way of the world, isn't it? But anyway, in my opinion, I think that, obviously, of course, the World War II was a horrific thing. And of course, come on, the Nazis were just the worst, weren't they? So, yeah, of course it was a victory. It was a victory for the Allies, bringing the war to a close, stopping the Nazi plan and all that kind of thing. And Alan Turing had a big role in doing that. And so he's a kind of a hero for many of us. What actually happened to him in his life, at the end of his life, after he'd done this, is actually quite tragic and sad. It's a good film, great acting by Benedict Cumberbatch in particular. Keira Knightley, I mean, I enjoy watching her, although I find her to be a little bit mannered. I mean, her performances seem to be a little bit contrived. I mean, I like her. I think she's attractive. She's a bit odd looking. She's quite sort of strange looking in a way. But I like her. I think she's got beautiful eyes, to be honest. She brings, you know, that quality that she has to this film. I mean, you know what I mean. When you see a Keira Knightley film, especially if it's a period drama set in the past, she just brings that sort of old-school English class and charm to these kinds of roles. I found that her performance was... I mean, I think that her role... she was meant to be a sort of maths geek, I think. I'm not that convinced that Keira Knightley was a maths geek in this film. She was just a little bit too glamorous. Maybe I'm making a judgment about what a mathematician looks like, but for me, I wasn't completely convinced that Keira Knightley was a mathematical genius, math geek kind of person. But, you know, I enjoyed the film a lot. Great acting. Benedict Cumberbatch is brilliant. Go and see the film. I recommend it. What else did I see? I saw a film called It Follows, which is a horror film. But I found it to be a bit adolescent, really. I'm 30-something now. I'm 37 years old now. And it takes quite a lot to scare me. I don't get freaked out by horror films that are aimed at teenagers or you know, adolescents or anything. I just don't get really freaked out by those things anymore. I found that It Follows was very stylish. It looks beautiful. It's very well shot, very atmospheric. It's got a retro kind of feel. It looks like it's filmed in the 80s or something, but it's not. It's very classy, very stylish looking. Looks really cool. The story is quite frightening, but just not quite frightening enough for me. Basically, it's about a girl who has a bad sexual experience, and then after that, she realizes that she's been cursed somehow, and something, a monster, a ghost, a zombie, we don't know what it is really, something is following her. And the thing is that it could be anyone. She doesn't know who it is because it changes its appearance every time it comes after her. And you know that it's coming for her because when you see it, it's just... It takes the form of a person, could be a stranger, could be a person that she knows, a person just walking in a straight line towards her. So let's say, for example, she's just had a class at university and she's outside eating some lunch with her friends. And in the distance, across the other end of the field, you see someone walking in a straight line towards her. That's the monster. And what actually happens, we learn, is that when the monster catches you, it kills you in a very gruesome way. And it's pretty atmospheric and pretty scary, but not scary enough, sorry. And I found that I wasn't convinced by the rules of the monster. Now, in any decent horror film, the monster has to have rules, okay? They have to have clearly defined rules. For example, zombies have got rules. You know, most films will establish the rules for zombies. For example, if it bites you, you get infected and then you become a zombie. Or, you know, if any of the blood of the zombie touches your skin, you get infected. You know, the only way to kill a zombie is to chop its head off, to remove its brain or to destroy the brain. That's the only way to kill it. Same thing with Dracula. Dracula has rules. If he's exposed to sunlight, he dies. Holy water burns his skin. You can kill him by driving a wooden stake through his heart. You know, those clearly defined rules establish what, you know what you're dealing with. But with this one, the rules were a little bit shaky. I wasn't completely convinced by the consistency of the rules of this. You know, it seemed to be, for example... One time, it's not clear, for example, how strong this thing is. Can it smash a door down or not? We don't really know. It's not clear if you can kill it. I suppose that's the point. The point is that you don't know. You know, you don't know really anything about it. It's mysterious. That's supposed to be scary, but I just found it frustrating. Anyway, It Follows. If you like atmospheric, retro, slightly hipsterish horror films, check it out. But I wasn't completely convinced. I prefer The Exorcist. I think that's a really scary film. It Follows, meh. It scared me a bit, but not enough. What else did we see? We saw Foxcatcher, which is a big Oscar-tipped movie starring Channing Tatum and Steve Carell and the guy who plays the Incredible Hulk. Mark Ruffalo. So it's a film about wrestlers in the USA. It's based on a true story. And basically, Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo are brothers and they're brilliant wrestlers. There's a weird undertone of competition between the two of them. They're very ambitious. They want to become the best wrestlers in the world and win a gold medal at the Olympics. Then there's this other guy played by Steve Carell. He wears lots of makeup. He's changed his appearance. He looks totally different to what you normally expect from him, because usually he does comedy. For example, he's in the American version of The Office, and he's usually a funny comedy character. In this film, he's very serious. He's very dark. And his character is a rich guy, extremely rich, one of the richest people in America, comes from an old money family, a kind of waspish family whose his mother is still alive. She breeds horses. She doesn't give him enough attention. In fact, she hasn't given him enough attention throughout his life, including when he was a child. And so this character played by Steve Carell is complicated, but he's very, very ambitious, and he offers these brothers lots of money to join his wrestling team so that they can then become, you know, they can win an Olympic gold medal for the USA. But it turns out that Steve Carell's character is not everything that he seems. And we wonder about him. There's some very dark, brooding moments where we think, what does this guy really want? What's actually going on? What's the relationship between him and the brothers? Is there a sort of, is there a homosexual thing going on here? You know, you kind of read between the lines. The film doesn't show you everything that's happening. You have to try and work out what's going on by reading between the lines. There's lots of silent moments with very heavy atmosphere. And thinking about it now, after having seen it, I think it was a good piece of work. I thought it was, you know, captivating and an interesting psychological drama in which you're not quite sure what's going on, but there's a sense of dread and threat at all times. But my experience of watching it in the cinema when I was actually there, it was too slow. It was just too slow. Performances were good, although Steve Carell's performance was a little bit ridiculous. Just a little bit. It was good, but something a bit kind of grotesque about his performance, which made me laugh sometimes during the film, in fact. And not in a good way. I found it a bit ridiculous. It would have been better, I swear, it would have been much better if it had just been sped up a little bit. If they could just, you know, the editing could have just been a little bit faster. They could have done the same story, but just sped up a bit. It would have been more engaging. It would have been more exciting. I would have been gripped. I would have been on the edge of my seat, wondering what was going to happen next. The problem is, the whole thing was just a bit too slow, and I got frustrated by that. So, good film, good characters, very atmospheric and moody, but just, frankly, too slow for me. There you go. Those are my little movie reviews of films I've seen recently. The first one was Imitation Game with Benedict Cumberbatch. Then it was It Follows, a little indie horror film. And the third one, Foxcatcher, starring Channing Tatum, Mark Ruffalo, Steve Carell. I would recommend Imitation Game out of that selection. What else do we have? There are certain, going back to Imitation Game, there are certain interesting things from a linguistic point of view. Okay, as a linguist, it's quite interesting because obviously the whole story of Imitation Game is about a guy who's trying to decode a secret language. And so there are elements of linguistics there, working out what the words in the code actually mean and trying to decode it from context. But also Alan Turing's story is quite interesting from a linguistic point of view. Because of his ineptness socially, he's quite special. He's a math genius. But he's got no sense of how to deal with social interactions. In fact, he doesn't really understand the way in which people communicate. He's so logical and rational that he takes everything that people say purely on face value. And in fact, when we communicate with each other, this is true in English and any other language, I imagine, when we communicate, we don't always say exactly what we mean. There's this thing called interlocutory force, which is the actual message that you're communicating. The message that you're communicating is not normally the message that's explicitly stated in your words. And there's a scene in the film which demonstrates this quite well. So he's working on solving the problem in this room with the other members of his team, and they all get up to go and have lunch, and they come over to his desk, and one of them says, we're just going to have some lunch. And he goes, okay. Because he doesn't realise that we're just going to have some lunch means, would you like to have lunch with us? In fact, it's a kind of tentative invitation to have lunch with them. We're just off to have some lunch. And he doesn't realise that he's inviting him for lunch because he's so rational and logical, he just takes it on face value. And he goes, okay. And there's this whole protracted scene where he doesn't understand, he's not sensitive, and he's not able to communicate on a human level with his colleagues. And then in the end, they all sort of hate him. So it's quite interesting, just the a study of the way in which we use language in a slightly irrational way, and the way in which words don't always mean what they seem to mean. And that's demonstrated a few times in a few different scenes throughout the film. It's quite interesting that although he's an expert at breaking a code and understanding a secret language, he can't actually understand the normal language that human beings use on a daily basis. So it's quite ironic in that way. There's also a scene where he tries to tell a joke. He's learned, Keira Knightley's character has explained to him that he doesn't know how to interact with people, and as a result, nobody likes him. And so she or someone else tells him that he needs to try and, you know, do certain things to make everyone like him. So there's a scene where he tries to tell them a joke, but he gets it all completely wrong, because the way that you tell a joke socially is that you have to choose your moment very carefully, usually in a relaxed, informal setting, maybe in the pub when you're all having a few drinks and you're relaxing. And when people start making jokes and the time is right, then you can tell your joke. But he gets it wrong. He arrives in the office in the morning and he sort of announces to the room in a very awkward way that he has a joke to tell them. He tells them the joke, delivers the punchline, and then goes, so there you are. And obviously no one laughs. It's a perfect example of how not to tell a joke. It's interesting. Yes. What else was I going to say? That's pretty much it. Just at the end of this episode, somehow it seems a bit weird, maybe even inappropriate, to add this at the end of this episode here when I've just been rambling on about films and other stuff. But I wanted to mention it, is that sadly, very sadly, at the end of last year, at the end of December, my grandfather Dennis died, and the whole family's been very sad about it. I wanted to just mention it was on my list, but what I'd like to do is devote a proper episode of the podcast to him, because I think that, well, it's the absolute least I could do. I mean, when you lose someone in your family, it's difficult to know quite what the appropriate thing to do is. And what you want to do is celebrate that person's life or do something that honours that person in the most appropriate way. And it's so hard. It's so hard really to summarise what it means to you when you lose someone that you love, and someone who's very close to you, who you've known for your whole life. It's really hard to know not only how to express that feeling, but also how to express that feeling in a way that does justice to that person. And I don't know if mentioning it here at the end of an episode of my podcast is the appropriate way to do that, but I didn't really know what the appropriate way to do it would be, so I thought I'll just try and explain it. It's nothing to do with you, I suppose. It's not really anything to do with you. But I wanted to say it just because somehow it's important to me. We had his funeral in January. I was very, very proud to have the opportunity to read his eulogy in the church. So there was a funeral service in his local church, the church he used to attend, and the church was full of people that he used to know at the church, all of his friends, many of whom I met afterwards, and, you know, my mum and dad and my brother and my uncle and my aunt and my girlfriend and my brother's girlfriend, you know, the members of the family. We met all of these friends that he had that we'd never met before. Well, that I hadn't met before. The whole day was quite a moving experience. Obviously, I'm very sad about losing my grandfather. But on the other hand, I don't think that he would want me or the rest of my family to just go around being sad all the time. I don't think anyone wants that. And so, despite the fact that I'm sad, and obviously I miss him a lot, and it's really hard to deal with the fact that I'll never see him again, and I'll never hear him talk. I'll never be able to ask him certain things I want to ask him, which I, for one reason or another, didn't manage to ask him when he was alive. He's gone from the world. It's so weird. It's so strange. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to deal with that. But what I really want to do is, as I've said, devote a whole episode to him, because he had an interesting life. And I mean, yeah, I would just like to talk about him. I think it would just be nice. I don't know if it's the best way to celebrate his life, but why not? It's the only way I've got. It's the only thing I have. It's the only forum that I can use, really, to talk about him. And I think that, actually, the audience to Luke's English Podcast are... I think that you would be a great audience to hear that story. So, let's see. Maybe I'll do an episode about him if I feel moved to do it. Okay? All right. So... you might be wondering at this point, what do you say to someone when they've lost a member of their family? What do you say? What's the appropriate thing to say to someone who's experiencing grief because they've lost someone? You can say, well, if you meet someone informally and they say, yeah, well, my granddad died, then you can say, oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Are you okay? All right. I'm really sorry to hear that. That's really sad. And now don't say what a pity, because what a pity. No, what a pity is when you wanted to book a restaurant but you couldn't because it was full. Oh, that's a pity. No, you should just say, that's really sad. Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. You can also say things like, oh, I'm really sorry for your loss. Really sorry for your loss. For more formally, maybe in written English, you might say, you know, best wishes to all your family, or you have my condolences to your family. That's quite a good thing to say. Okay, I think it's time to end this episode of the podcast on a slightly sad note, but you know, there's no reason to be sad. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, we all have the day in the future, one day when all of this will end, right? I mean, none of us expect to live forever, do we? Of course we don't. We live every day in the knowledge, with the certainty that we won't be existing on Earth forever, and the people around us too. I think it's okay to remember that sometimes, and in fact, it kind of brings you back to reality, doesn't it? When you realise that we're not here forever. None of this is forever. All the people around you. It's not forever. You know, take action now. Seize the day. Carpe diem. Remember that before you know it, you could just wake up one day and it's all changed. You could wake up one day and someone who you've been thinking about, or someone you've not been thinking about but you should have been thinking about, is gone. So remember that now. That the people around you, tell them what you think. Tell them that you love them. Tell them how much they mean to you. If you've got questions and things you need to say to the people around you, say them. Now, I don't have a lot of regret about my granddad, because we were close. I did talk to him about lots of things I wanted to talk to him about, like the things that he did when he was young, the things he did in his life, the fact that he fought in the war, and other stuff like that. I did talk to him about a lot of those things. I think that, you know, he'd made peace with the world and all that stuff, and it was okay. So I can now remember him with a sense of joy. Just remember, none of this is forever. So don't take anyone for granted. Just tell people that you love them, if you love them. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? All right, that's the end of this episode. Thanks very much for listening. Speak to you again soon. Bye, 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 bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.